What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was your take on Ben Johnson's arrival at Halas Hall? Is there any concern Johnson is being regarded as a savior and not a coach? Did you like his message to the other employees up at Halas Hall?
Nothing more important than that locker room and us serving that locker room and those players. All right? They need to understand that. They need to feel that from us every single day. And if we do that, the wins are going to come. The playoffs are going to come.
Your reaction to hearing Ben Johnson yesterday up at Halas Hall?
You know, I thought he, you know, the old line, you only have one chance to make a first impression. I thought he made a great first impression. He came in, he cracked wise, everyone had a laugh. There was great energy in the building. And then he got to his message, and that was his message. And that was what he was reminding everybody. And I think it's an important message. It's not you're working in the NFL and you have a job, and I think everybody gets caught up in what they're doing and how they're doing it. It's why are you there? What's the point of the exercise? It's about the locker room. It's about the players. It's about the team. And you want to support the team and be around the team and help the team. And it's not about you and what you're doing and whatever. I think anybody who works in a place like that needs that message. I think it's a good message to send, and I think it's an important one. The players, that's how you win. Players matter, and I hope that that is taken into account in all walks of the building. And I, you know, you get happy team, you got a winning team.
Mully, I agree. You never get a chance to make a first impression. It was a good first impression. Great video put out by the Bears. There was a video that circulated a little bit before time that maybe the Bears weren't too happy about. We could get into that later, potentially. But, you know, setting the bar pretty high. Now, he didn't say when, but, you know, he put it out there. And the playoffs are going to come. Right, the playoffs are going to come. You guys got a sense of humor. You heard it as we wrapped up the pregame show. Get back to work, right? The guy commanded the room, something else that we've talked about. Can he be a leader of men? Can he command a room? Or is he just this, really intelligent, offensive-minded geek that's going to hide behind a laminated play sheet? I don't think that's the case. Now, more to come today, but as far as a first impression and winning the first time the Bears were able to capture him on video and audio for social media, that was a touchdown Ben Johnson.
We did not know this about Ben Johnson. We wondered how he would be proverbial front of the room, and we wondered if he could have command. This guy led with a joke. He had everybody laughing. This guy is a savvy communicator, and I think that when you saw his rah-rah enthusiasm, it's not for everybody, but it's appropriate now. And this is how you win over people, because he also understood that he wasn't only talking to the people that were – gathered on the second floor and watching him talk and hearing him, you know, articulate his vision and all those things. He's talking to the players. That was meant for the players. That strategy of saying that it's all about the players and the people in the locker room was smart. It wasn't selfish. He wasn't taking that moment, his first real moment at Halas Hall, and telling everyone what it meant to him and his career. Said him and his family, that's a good move too, in that building for that ownership group. Yes, absolutely. His family with the young kids, it was straight out of Central Casting. No, it wasn't Brian Kelly. It was the opposite of Brian Kelly. This is a likable guy. This is a guy we didn't know if he would bring that to make it as obvious this early that he was a good communicator in front of people. The charisma, the energy, the temperature in the room changed when he walked into it yesterday.
I mean, it's a great question.
What is your take on the Bears rumored to be hiring Lions offensive line coach Hank Fraley as their new OC under Ben Johnson? Fraley is interviewing for the same job out in Seattle with the Seahawks, second interview there. How great would it be if the Bears could add one of the best O-line coaches in the NFL? The Lions, they're rumored to be promoting their passing game coordinator to the OC position. Will the Lions take a step back next year?
Well, it's inevitable. They probably will. They're going to have to replace both coordinators. I think the Bears going after a guy like Hank Fraley, whose reputation is as good as it ever has been, speaks to how aggressive they will be and how attractive this job will be and this destination will be for assistant coaches who likely will be compensated well. That had to be one of the conditions for Ben Johnson taking this job. He'll take care of his assistants, and he'll try to attract the best in the business. Hank Fraley would qualify. If they don't get him, that doesn't make this any less exciting for the offense. It won't mean any much difference for your projections. It would just make things better. Just like when you bring in Dennis Allen defensively, that will make that better. He'll be the assistant head coach, essentially, in charge of the defense, much the way that Vic Fangio was for Matt Nagy. When you don't know how Ben Johnson will make the transition to be a head coach with all that comes with those responsibilities, accountability, and in doling out discipline and being in charge of late game management, all those things, you need a experienced guy like Dennis Allen running your defense if that's not your area of expertise. So this is a good indication that Ben Johnson is going to attract the best in the league for his staff. The all-star staff, as I think Adam Schefter referred to it, or star-studded staff. So if they get, frankly, great. If they don't, I still think they'll get somebody who's very good at his job.
Star-studded?
Florio was beautiful with you guys yesterday. I like this idea of Hank Fraley as the offensive coordinator. He'd really be the offensive line coach and the offensive coordinator, as we know that Ben Johnson will be calling the plays on Sundays or Mondays or Thursdays or Friday, whenever the NFL decides to play a game. I guess maybe Tuesdays, the one day the NFL won't play a game unless that falls on Christmas. You always want to take coaches away from the team in your division. The only thing you have to tap the brakes on, this was part of the selling point with Craig Counsell. And what did the Brewers do? They won the division without the great Craig Counsell. And the replacement for Craig Counsell won the coach of the year, manager of the year, skipper of the year, David, skipper of the year. So maybe that always doesn't work. But yes, I believe the Lions will take a step back, and let's hope that the friendship between Hank Fraley and Ben Johnson is strong enough to get him to come to Chicago and not go west to Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, either way, it's going to hurt the Lions, but that would be a great guy to bring in here. I was talking to a crusty old veteran coach who had joked with me before that it was no surprise that Poles and Ben Johnson had gotten together, because when you think about it, they'd both kind of passed on Jaden Daniels. He said that he could have been the coach in Washington, but let Dan Quinn get that job, and obviously the general manager took Caleb. And I didn't find it. I told him I thought Caleb was going to be okay. We didn't have a great conversation. Then he texted me later and said that, hey, if they get Fraley, I'll change my opinion on everything the Bears are doing. So I don't know if he's throwing me a bone or not. But
does he not like the move?
With who?
With Ben Johnson?
No, he didn't dislike him. He was just joking about about the way they got together. But no, he loved the move with Fraley. He thought it would be something that would make him more complete as a coach, because there'd be an element that isn't his expertise that would be looked out for. And I think that's what you're talking about with the defensive coordinator as well, and special teams. You know, the key with all of these jobs, if you have the money that the Bears are apparently providing to get the best, is to understand your own limitations and make sure that you are hiring people that are going to benefit you as a head coach. So that's apparently what he's doing, and I think it's great. I think it'd be really a good one.
I love the question.
Voice of Stacey Dale. She's with you guys at 9 this morning. How important is the AFC title game to Kansas City, in Kansas City, for the Bills and their quarterback, Josh Allen? Can you believe the 28-year-old Allen has the most wins by a quarterback without a Super Bowl appearance? Most wins in the playoffs. He's at 7 right now. It's 2 more victories than the next group of quarterbacks: Phillip Rivers, Mark Burnell, Danny White. Those 3 have 5. How important is Sunday to Josh Allen?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Josh Allen needs to play in a Super Bowl, period, end of story. I don't think he will be. I don't. You know, he's still young enough that he can play in plenty of Super Bowls, but I think that's how we judge quarterbacks. That is really the way that you assess them, and there are other guys on the scene now that are pretty good quarterbacks, and they've been coming up in the last couple of years. And I think that you want to be a guy, big win for him to get past Lamar, but you don't want to be the guy that can't beat Patrick Mahomes, which is really the whole bloody league. So you want, you know, are they favored by a point, or is it a pick 'em?
Two.
Two, they're favored by 2 points. He needs to have a huge game to get them to where they want to go. And I get it. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs haven't had this great season. They haven't had this dominant season. They've just won. And that's how you get home field, and that's when it becomes really important, is when you have it in a championship game like this. So it's a big game for Josh Allen. I'm not saying he's not a good quarterback. He's got 7 playoff wins. That's fantastic. But you got to get to a Super Bowl. It's time.
Well, Josh Allen's going to have to pass the ball a little bit better than he did the other night. Obviously, the Bills won. They survived. They advanced. They're at this point. But they're playing against a team on the road that has now been in 7 straight AFC title games. I mean, does Josh Allen need it? I mean, I think he needs it as much as Lamar Jackson, and Lamar Jackson can barely make it to an AFC title game, you know, 3-5 in the divisional round. So it's big, but again, this is the Michael Jordan of NFL. And here's another part of this. Like, are fans, is the public, are we tired of the Chiefs, or do we want this story? Do we want to see if they can three-peat? Can they get down to New Orleans and have the opportunity to three-peat and kind of set a new standard in the NFL? I think it's a story, I'll speak for myself, that I want to see happen. I want to see them get to the point where they can three-peat. I don't want the Chiefs' run to end this Sunday. And again, you'll hear those games on The Score this weekend, starting with the coverage at 1 o'clock.
Josh Allen winning as much as he has in the playoffs, I think, speaks to who he is as a quarterback, but also he's on a remarkably consistent team. I mean, the Bills' consistency sometimes gets overshadowed by the Ravens and the Chiefs because of what they've done. But Josh Allen, yeah, he needs a victory, and he'd love to see him in the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl so he can put himself at a different level. But I think this is as much on the rest of the team as it is on him on Sunday. I think he's going to play. He could have a game, and he has had games against the Chiefs where he played well enough and he deserved to win, and they didn't win because something Mahomes did or something the Chiefs defense did or something, whatever. It's out of his hands. He can only control so much. He is the most important player on that team, so we evaluate him. But, Dustin, I would say that, yeah, his numbers weren't great on Sunday, but he made some clutch plays and some unbelievable throws that reminded you of why he is in this position and why we're talking about him in this way. I do think that there's some Chiefs fatigue, but they are likable because of Mahomes. I think Kelce has his own following, and Andy Reid is fun to root for. So this is going to be a great matchup. I don't know that I'll look at Josh Allen that much differently until he wins a Super Bowl. That's not fair, but that's the way, unfortunately, quarterbacks are evaluated. He's good enough to win a Super Bowl this year. If he doesn't, then I think he's still going to be one of those guys like Joe Burrow, like Lamar Jackson, that is in the category of the best guys who have never won at all.
It's a good question.
And that's the voice of Chris Chelios. He's here at 844. We'll get his opinions on the Bears landing Ben Johnson as the next head coach. What is your take on the Baseball Hall of Fame's three-man class? Ichiro Suzuki, CC Sabathia, and Billy Wagner. How about Mark Burley remaining on the ballot after getting 11.4% of the vote? Will he ever make it to the Hall of Fame?
I voted for all three guys. I think they all are deserving. I'm glad Billy Wagner got in. I think that he, when you look at his numbers, they're staggering in terms of the consistency over the years and his reaction to getting into the Hall of Fame. You could play the audio, but there is no audio. It's just him crying. And the video is touching. And you think that, boy, somebody like that waiting as long as he has, that was a nice moment. Ichiro, obviously, he's one of the best of his generation, no doubt about it. The fact that it wasn't unanimous is silly. Somebody out there either made a mistake or filed a ballot that they wanted to be noticed. And CC Sabathia, the numbers for him, they're just the durability, 19 seasons, and his postseason record and the All-Star games and the Cy Young Award, I think he's deserving now and would have been, hard to believe if he wasn't a first ballot guy. Mark Burley, nice to see him get 11%, gets a little bit closer. I don't think I voted for him too. I voted for Mark Burley. I hope that he gets in. I don't think it's realistic. I think at some point in time, maybe it's a veterans committee type of thing, but it just seems like the hill is too steep for him to get up there. And there aren't as many people like me that look at him, his candidacy aging well because of the way we view starting pitchers. So I hope he gets in, but I'm doubtful.
I love this. I love talking about this. I love debating this. The Ichiro Suzuki, no doubt about it. He was the guy. I don't know if there's a rule. David, maybe you can tell me. Is there a rule that you have to have a class bigger than one? And there's also the Veterans Committee, so there's a couple of guys with some local ties that are getting in from the veteran standpoint. In my opinion, I would have only, if I was voting, only Ichiro would have gotten my vote. I want to stay consistent. CC Sabathia, we could talk about it, but he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. And my other question is this. Why in the world does the Baseball Hall of Fame voters have an issue with closers? I mean, why did it take Billy Wagner, who is top eight all time in that category, to get to this point? In my world, you're either a first ballot or a second ballot, or you got to wait till the Veterans Committee decide to, you know, feel sorry for you and let you in. Okay, whatever. But like, why did it take his last time to get in when he's top eight to ever do something in the history of the sport? Makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is the reason I wouldn't have voted him for the Hall of Fame. I think Billy Wagner has got something like a 10.0 ERA in the playoffs. And I think it's great when you can be among the top 10 to do something. But when you can't get it done when it counts most, that's kind of how you judge closers, right? I just think there aren't a lot of – there's not a lot of understanding of what you're looking for in a closer. And I think that the whole idea of, like, Hall of Fame or not, I think, you know a Hall of Famer when you see one, you know – Ichiro Suzuki's a Hall of Famer, period, end of story. I can't believe anyone would vote against him, even as a he wasn't good enough. Jeter got a vote against him, so you can't let him in. Jeter should have gotten in, and this guy should get in. I don't understand why you're trying to, keep it from being unanimous. I also think that CC Sabathia is a Hall of Famer, and I love guys that are especially like big baseball players that are not really in shape, that didn't have to get every ounce out of what they had because they were good enough to be good enough. And I just, there's something about that element of baseball. Some of my favorite all-time players are guys that were in half shape. And I appreciate that. I mean, CeCe, man, what an amazing career. So, yeah, I don't dislike the class. And, I suppose if it was me, I'd include Billy Wagner. I just think more people need to get in. I don't know why you have to be kind of guardians of the gate. I think you look at Billy Wagner's reaction. I'm glad he got in. Wouldn't that have been awful if he was weeping because he didn't get in? If a guy's going to cry, he's going to cry.
I don't know if that answered the question.
What do you think of Matas Buzelis being picked or volunteering to compete in the NBA dunk contest? And will Buzelis be the only Bull represented at the All-Star game?
I hope Zach LaVine makes it. And you look at how many 30-point games he has, and he's tied now with Bob Love for the lead in Bulls history, which blows my mind. But that's great. I think he's a hell of a player, and I hope he gets in. I think it'd be great to see him make it, and I think he's had a good enough year. People said, what about Vooch? I don't think you get two when you have this kind of a season. And if I had to choose one or the other, I would take Zach LaVine.
Believe it or not, I think Zach LaVine also deserves a trip to this year's All-Star game.
Now, there's a headline. Yep. There's a headline.
He has been playing. He's been playing really, really well. Those don't always result in wins. This would also, a trip to the All-Star game would help his stock, if it needs any more help, to get his contract and Max LaVine out of town. I'm ready for that to happen. As far as Buzelis, good. It drives me wild that more stars in the NBA do not want to participate in All-Star Saturday night. I actually prefer All-Star Saturday night than the actual All-Star game. But Buzelis, what was up the other night? I mean, the Bulls won against the Clippers. They did it pretty handily as far as NBA games are concerned.
Yeah.
And Buzelis didn't play in the second half.
One for six in the
first half. And then Billy said, I kind of forgot about it.
One for six.
I mean, how does AK feel about that?
He's one for six. You got to play way out of the floor.
But when Max Levine's one for six, David, you're still clapping for the guy.
You can't even compare those two things. That's absurd. Zach LaVine has 109 30-point games on his resume. And you want me to compare it to Matas Buzelis? Please.
But he does have one for six. He does have one for six scoring nights. He does score 2 points in the first half of an NBA game, despite the fact of being a max player.
Okay. Buzelis is a creative dunker. He's explosive. He's an athlete. I think he wanting to be part of the dunk contest is understandable. What, he's 19. Those kids love that stuff. But can he bring the three-point shooters to miss the three-pointers so he can dunk the rebound? Because those are some of his best moments when he's dunking rebounds. I don't know if there's going to be another All-Star with the Bulls, but Zach LaVine has earned it.
Mm-hmm.
Just maybe a career. Get him back in the All-Star team. This guy is underappreciated. I don't know how long he'll be a Bull. Casey Johnson thinks they're going to have to keep him. There's trade chatter about Vooch, maybe more prevalent. Did you see the Suns made a big trade yesterday to get 3 first-round draft picks that they can deal? You wonder if they're going to be in the Vooch market, or are they going all in on Jimmy Butler? A lot of intrigue as we get nearer February 6th. I don't know how much we'll include the Bulls, but glad for Buzelis, who needs this maybe boost of confidence, gives him something to do over the All-Star break, and I hope that he is accompanied by Zach LaVine.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
With a final nod to the college football playoffs, how did the longest season in college football history treat you? Was it the best? What about potential tweaks, and what would you change?
Well, I would reseed the playoff field once you get into it, and I think, or if not reseeding, I would reexamine how you assign buys. And teams like Boise State and Arizona State did not deserve to be given those breaks in the bracket. And I think that, to me, was the biggest disparity. You can continue to evaluate whether or not you want the 12 most deserving teams or the 12 best teams and talk about that. But I like 12 as a number, as long as they're seeded correctly and the matchups make sense. I didn't mind how long the season went. I think these guys are quasi-professionals. I understand that there's a difference, and I continue to look at, there are two different versions of college football. But the one we saw in the 12-team playoff, those programs, those Power Four programs and everybody else, they understand what they're getting themselves into. It is professional football. They have $20 million payrolls. So I don't have as much maybe empathy or sympathy for the season that lasts as long. They've got to be smart about it, but these coaches are these days. I loved everything that happened about the playoff. I was riveted to almost every game. Maybe it was because Notre Dame was involved. Maybe because the Big Ten won again. They are the best football conference in America. SEC, take that.
Take that, SEC. David, you and I will agree on that wholeheartedly. I would add two teams immediately. There would be no buys. I love the first game being on the campus of the higher-seeded team. I thought that was really, really cool. Would any coach, would any team want the bye? The byes didn't help. All the teams with the byes lost. Right. I mean, remember that. So,
great,
you know,
point.
The other part about this, I mean, we wouldn't get to talk about Scataboo if it wasn't for this. Like, we wouldn't, a lot of people wouldn't know outside of ASU who Scataboo was without, you know, the fact that he starred as we all sat under a blanket on New Year's Day at 11 a.m. and watched that game get going. So I would add two more teams, no buys, continue to play on the college campus the original week. I enjoyed it, of course, because Notre Dame got to where they got to. I just don't know if and when Notre Dame will ever be able to be the last team standing.
Yeah, I think that it's really interesting to just take a look at the college season and reflect upon it. You know, Notre Dame and Ohio State, there's no chance they'd have been in a championship game. They wouldn't have been in the playoffs if you hadn't expanded things. And that's really interesting because, you know, the team that really got the worst draw of any team was Oregon. How did they wind up having to play Ohio State? You know, I saw that Jim Phillips is talking about kind of how they're going to do their thing with the conference champion and how they're going to deal with that. I think Jim sees it coming a mile away, and I think he understands that we're going to get to a point where some of these teams aren't going to want to be in a conference championship. They're going to see a better future for themselves and better opportunity if they don't play in a conference championship. Because look what happened to Oregon.
Look at Oregon.
I got to tell you, you should scuttle the conference championship thing right now.
Money grabs.
Too much money. I know it's money grabs. You don't need any conference champion getting a bye or getting a home game or whatever it is. You take the top four teams in the country, even if three of them are in the same a conference, and you put them as the top four teams, and then you go from there. Because the way they did this, it was a joke. It was there were two conference champions that didn't deserve to have a bye week or a home game, and they showed you that immediately. And I think it ended up damaging teams. I'm not far away from what you're saying, Dustin. Just scuttle. Make it 14 and scuttle the idea of having any kind of bye weeks. I think I could live with that. But I would say this idea that you got to have conference representation is a joke. And I get it. It's like it's just a way there's tradition and it's a way of making those games matter. But they don't matter. And I think we saw that by the time the tournament was over. Great, great season. Loved all the games. Can't believe how much I enjoyed the expanded playoffs because I wasn't sure if I liked the idea. I thought it was phenomenal. So keep tweaking. Don't you stop your tweaking.